Welcome to the Healthy Church Growth Show podcast. This show is for leaders in the church and their teams. If you're looking for strategies, ideas, and insights on growing a healthier, sustainable church, then you're in the right place. Every Monday, my guests and I discuss topics such as leadership, discipleship, evangelism, church planting, and so much more. The podcast will provide you with practical takeaways you can use for a healthier church. I'm Minister Madge Obaseki, your host. I'm the CEO of Grow the Church Now, a church consultant, advanced trainer and facilitator, and author. I help churches identify retention and growth solutions. I'm also honored to be the host of this podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Healthy Church Growth Show podcast. We're talking Pharisee to Fisher of Men. Why? Because I saw a quote from my guest and I wanted to know what he meant, because many of us through our journey, our faith journey, have found that there are people out there that are well-meaning perhaps, but want to stick to the rules, the regulations, without thinking about the people that they're dealing with and the relationships that need to be built as a fisher of men. So I want to talk to Chris Starron today about that. Hi, Chris.
Hello, thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you. So you are not only a writer, you are a film producer, you're a podcast host, and one thing that I guessed about you was that you're a thespian. Actually, you're a comedian as well.
Yeah, for those who are watching the video, you can actually see some of the posters of the improv troupe that I'm involved in. We haven't performed a show in a year because of COVID. But by the grace of God, we have another one coming up, and I've got all this pent-up comedy inside of me. And I'm so excited to get back after it, yeah.
What sorts of comedy are we talking about?
Improvised comedy. So we just get suggestions from the audience and then we make scenes based on the suggestions. So it's all off the top of your head. It's a lot of fun. And we've been doing it the same group basically for about 11 years. And It's been such a blessing because we've been able to get to know each other, and we've been through births and deaths and marriages and divorces and all this stuff together. Mm-hmm. And the joy of being able to have permission to be funny through all of that stuff. It's like therapy in a way. And so I really miss it, and I cannot wait to get back to it.
Christian comedy, or is it for people?
Yeah, it's for all the masses. I tend to be a believer that all church going people should be involved in at least one thing outside of the church, in the community, because otherwise, how are you going to meet people? How are you going to interact? So this has been such a blessing. We've made such great friendships through doing this, reaching out to folks, and some are believers in the group, but most are not.
Oh, that's really interesting, because this all ties into this subject that we're going to be talking about today.
Yes, it does.
Because, you know, I think I probably have been guilty of this as well. You know, there's a book. Now, I can't remember the author's name, and it is an old book, and it's called Accidental Pharisee. I don't know if you've come across it.
No.
I'll dig out and I'll get the link for the show notes. But and he talks about the fact that, you know, people don't set out to be pharisaical. But unfortunately, because of perhaps your denomination, the traditions around that, and the focus on the rules, the regulations, the law says, you know, back in the day when we had Pharisees, you know, that's what they did. They were kind of the politicians of their day, really, if you think about it. So I guess really that's where it can come from. So it's really interesting that you're in a space where you are able to speak to people of little or perhaps no faith, right, and still relate to them. And we should be relatable, shouldn't we?
I think so. Yeah. And humor is a great way to do that. It's a great way to build bridges and just open up conversations. We have folks that'll say hello to us because they recognize us. They'll see us in the grocery store or on the bus. And it just opens up these great doors to be able to chat with folks where they don't know me from church, but they know me as this guy who does comedy out in the world. And that's a real joy to be able to have that.
Really occurred to me that if you're operating in that space, are you able to evangelize to people if they want to hear a deeper message?
Generally not from the stage, but we do that just on a one-on-one basis.
A relationship.
Yeah, a relationship. Because again, it's not a Christian event.
No.
I will plug my podcast from time to time on stage. But generally I don't witness from that, but it has opened up doors for us to be able to share with people.
So, I mean, I'm fascinated by that. So, I mean, you've written a book and you've also had produced and directed two feature length films as well.
Yes.
As well as doing the podcast, which is called The Truth Podcast. And I'm really interested in your podcast because it's very different to what I've been listening to. You bring up a lot of historical data from, well, since the Reformation. In fact, there's one episode that talks about the Church of England. And because we're based in the UK, my ears pricked up. although that's not my tradition exactly, I went to a Church of England school, but I didn't end up in the Church of England, if you like. Right. So I was really interested in that. But you bring up some incredibly controversial subjects. Why?
And it's not to be controversial. I just generally find, especially in the last several years, it feels like everybody is so angry at each other. And, COVID kind of made things even worse and polarized everybody. And I find that frequently when we're angry at somebody, we rarely know why. Or what we're talking about, that anger response comes and then we don't have to think anymore. It's like if you ever had a loved one and you've gotten an argument with them, you'll be arguing about something that is so trivial. And then you'll realize I'm not really angry about them not doing the dishes. I'm angry at them because they forgot my birthday or, they forgot that I told them to get this from the store. And I find that that is very similar in our intellectual lives. Rarely are we angry at the thing that we're talking about. So I'm trying to go back in time in history and actually explain some of these events that we have all this pent up anger about, but we generally don't actually know why we're angry. We don't know the facts of the thing. And I find that if you know the context of something, it's much easier to engage with it and to better understand it and maybe to understand, hey, I shouldn't be so angry about this, or maybe I should be more angry about it. But our responses will be better if we have the right information. And so often, I think that the Pharisee way is often to understand a tradition, to have an idea of the law that this thing is right, but not necessarily to understand the backstory of why that thing is there. I have some folks in my church that I love dearly, but they get upset when we don't sing the doxology at the end of every service. Praise God from whom all blessings flow. Yeah, it's a great song, right?
Yeah. What tradition is that?
Oh, I go to a Baptist church, but I'm not sure. It's just what they've grown up with. The interesting thing about my church is we've got folks from basically every faith tradition, every denomination. We've got ex-Mormons, ex-Catholics, ex-atheists. We've got Baptist, Methodist, everything. And so who knows? It's hard to suss out where everything comes from. You take something that it's that really good, it's a great song, but then you put it into the law where we have to sing this, or that was not a church service. And that's what the Pharisees in the New Testament did. They weren't just like following actual biblical law. They were also following tradition and making new law out of that. And you see that all the time. We all have that in our hearts. I grew up in a church that had a young adult program, and I'm not going to church without a young adult program. It's like, well, it's not really in the Bible. There are no young adult programs in the Bible.
If you're not speaking in tongues, then you are not born again. I wrote a discipleship book a few years ago, and I actually went back to university in 2016 to study theology. And once I'd done a year, I realized that that book had to come off the shelf. And the reason, and the reason for that is because it just had one focus and one way of thinking. And it was about the tradition that I was involved in at the time. And it was very, very narrow. And, you know, if, for instance, a Catholic picked it up, or perhaps even a Baptist, they wouldn't be able to relate to it. And I didn't want that anymore. So I took it off the shelf. So we do have this kind of tunnel vision sometimes of where we are. And this is the way you need to be. And one of those things was, you know, if you can't speak in tongues, then you're not valid. But that's not true.
Right. Yeah. And we all have those things. It's sort of natural. It's part of us to, I almost think like it's a survival technique that we need to find out who our people are. But I'm sure that the way that you found out that that wasn't quite right is that you met people who were different than you. Yeah. And you compared it to the actual Bible. And yeah, study on your own and finding out what's really behind that stuff is important. So like in my personal journey, a lot of what happened to kind of bump me out of that fundamentalism was to meet people who I was kind of grew up because listening to fundamentalist radio, being afraid of those people, you know, the people who were coming for, you know, prayer in schools and who wanted to convert you to their crazy Hinduism or something. I don't know. There was always something to be afraid of. And when I actually met people at a very secular school that I went to, and then working in Los Angeles, realized that the problem wasn't like that those people are actively rebelling against God. Some people do. But generally, most of the folks I encountered had never heard of Jesus. Or if they had, it was just through a joke or through a newspaper or something. And so often those people were not what I thought they were. They just really needed to know Jesus because nobody had ever really told them before, which was a whole awakening for me. To learn that, because you do have to be aware that there are people who are actively against Jesus and who are, you know, there are bad folks out there. At the same time, most of them are not folks you're ever going to meet. If you're out there and wanting to do the work of God, you need to figure out where people are, and that takes listening, and that's really hard to do. Figure out who they are, where they are, and then figure out how to serve them. And a lot of that does take learning the Bible for yourself, reading it, finding out because there are laws in the Bible. There are things we need to abide by. Figure out what the importance are, important must-haves are, and then figure out what's not so important. Personal preferences, the doxology at the end of the service, those kinds of things that we can bend on. We can definitely bend on.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about context. So you kind of intimated it, but tell me what specific event led you from where you were, the kind of Pharisee mindset, to where you are now, which you describe as a fisher of men. What led you to that point?
There were so many different things, and it took a long time. And I feel like I'm still going through it.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, well, one of the big things was reading the Bible for myself. I had a friend of mine named Steve who went to Moody Bible Institute, and as part of their curriculum, they had to read the Bible. And as a Christian, you'd think, oh, that's obvious, that's really easy. But I was sort of a like thunk the Bible on the table, whatever page it fell open to, that's what I'm reading today kind of guy. And I had no context of how things tied together. And so it started, you know, I had to start with Genesis and just head to the right, you know? And I started realizing that a great deal of what I believed and what I thought was not actually in the Bible. And a lot of what the Bible says was never actually taught. I was never taught any of the hard stuff, you know,
give me examples.
Well, you would think of maybe like the prophets or the exile to Babylon or Assyria in the Old Testament, which are vital because we have this idea that if we are the people of God, nothing bad can ever happen to us. But then you go and you read, you know, the story of Jesus. He's the most perfect person who's ever lived.
Absolutely.
Ever. And what do they do with him? They crucify him. You know, Paul is shipwrecked and he's beaten. He's thrown out of town. He's bitten by snakes. All this terrible stuff happens. And I had never really been taught how to deal with those things. It opened my mind up a lot. And then, of course, the other thing was meeting so many people in college who Fundamentalist Radio told me to fear. And then I just realized that there was nothing to be afraid of, because they just simply had never heard of Jesus. So you can't fault somebody for something that they've never heard. They aren't actively rebelling against something that they don't know. That was a really eye-opening experience, just to meet different people.
But you went to Moody Bible College, is that right?
No, my friend did, yeah. And so he just relayed that tradition or that task over to me. I went to Ithaca College in Ithaca, New York, which is a very secular school.
Yeah. So, but nevertheless, you know, you had this kind of revelation and you dug deep and you did your hermeneutics and you did, you know, you did your exegesis and whatever, and you really dug deep and found some clues in that. So was it a shock to you that that was how you were thinking and it might be a bit of an error?
It was, yeah. I mean, it was a shock to me because I had a lot of very proper theology and stuff, but I had never really applied it. Or if I did, it was kind of I'm going to throw the gospel at you and it's your fault if you don't take it kind of deal. You know? One of the sort of pivotal moments, I worked on a reality show when I lived in Los Angeles. Mm. And I was a camera assistant, kind of low on the toll there. And I got to share the gospel with the guy who was the producer and director on this thing. He just started opening up to me. I'm like, what's happening? Oh, we're doing this now. Okay, great. And then one of the sound guys got really in my face about all you Christians believe X, Y, Z, and you're all doing this. And it was in that process of ministering to one guy and then trying to understand why this guy was angry at me that also helped me understand sort of the legacy that Christians have given ourselves, especially in the United States, where many of us are mean or jerks or, you know, seek after wealth when we should be helping people and serving them. Part of that interaction was just listening to what he was actually saying. Mm. And understanding, you know, somebody there had really hurt him in the past. And so that all that stuff, I mean, there's just so many examples throughout life where if you're paying attention, you'll understand, oh, this is the legacy that we Christians actually have. And if I can be the exception to what people think of when they think of Christians, if I'm actually nice, if I actually listen, I might have a door to share the gospel where they've got a pretty hard heart. Yeah. So there's tons of examples.
For people, this podcast is for leaders in the church. And, right. You know, I think if you're a leader that's open to perhaps change or to self-improvement, this is going to help them. So I wonder if there's one example or a couple of examples that you have where people perhaps have misinterpreted what they think they knew or read in the Bible that's actually not true.
Oh goodness, I could get into trouble with this.
Oh, I love that. I love this zone.
Oh goodness. Well, I mean, if you get in that chapter of Jeremiah where it says, you know, I know I have for I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and to keep you. You're laughing already.
you know why I'm laughing.
Why is that?
Oh, because you know why.
It's one of those verses that it's easy to put on a coffee mug or on a t-shirt and people use it as their life verse.
Yeah.
But if you read the verse in context of the story, the people of Israel are being carried off to Babylon.
Yeah.
And their nation that they thought that was a perfect nation, it was God's nation, that they were a blessed people, that is being exported to Babylon in that time. And if you keep reading the rest of that, it says that they're going to be there for a long time, first of all. So this plan that you had to have this godly nation, you put that away for a while. But also the people that are staying in Israel are going to be persecuted mercilessly. And so that whole chapter is filled with all of this tension where it's like, if you go to Babylon, you're going to be fine. If you go and into captivity and are not free in the sense that, you know, we would think of freedom, if you go off into that and are not free, you're going to be just fine. But if you stay here where you want to stay, you're going to be horribly persecuted. It's one of those verses that it's amazing to me that we take it out of context so much. But it's because it looks great on a bumper sticker or on a coffee mug. And it's, you can sell a lot when you tell people you're gonna do great, you're gonna prosper. But the reality, and this is where I think we get into trouble, especially if you're a leader, is that it's easy to preach that and it's easy to get a big audience by preaching that. But when people encounter reality, when you know they have a loved one die, when they have a car accident, you know, when they have a medical illness, they lose the use of their legs or whatever, they're going to think of that verse and think, you know, my pastor told me everything would be perfect and that God has the plans for me. God must hate me, or I must be degenerate in some way because my life is not going the way that my pastor told me to. When in reality, the Bible is full of people being bitten by snakes and thrown out of town and being crucified, for example. That's one of the things I love about the Bible is it's very three-dimensional and it really speaks to our existence. But if we as leaders are only going to focus on one little tidbit, it can do a tremendous disservice to our congregation. So yeah, that verse from Jeremiah is kind of a bugaboo of mine.
But do you feel that you mentioned somebody saying, well, my pastor didn't tell me this. So the pastor becomes the font of all knowledge, but actually, yes. Is it to do with the fact that there is not intentional discipleship going on, would you say?
I mean, it's all over the place. It depends case by case on the church, but I think one of the temptations is to make the pastor that person. And when in fact, the best thing a leader in a church can do is be giving away the ability to take care of yourself.
You know, empowerment, in other words.
Empowerment, there you go. Yeah, so I mean, occurred to me during COVID here, there were so many people that were really upset in churches because they couldn't get go to that specific church experience that they've been going to forever. And I was thinking about John, who wrote the book of Revelation, exiled to the island of Patmos, off by himself, and has this revelation, and he continues to be a man of God off by himself.
Yeah.
And I thought, what is it about us, the way that we're doing church now, that we can't, if you took one person and took them away from their community, they'd walk away from the faith. What can we be doing to empower people enough that they can be ready to go to Patmos? You know, they can be ready to go to jail. They can be ready to go off to a city where nobody knows them. Nobody knows who Jesus is. I think the problem is that it's so easy, even as podcasters, to need people to keep coming back to us, that we don't maybe think about empowering them. The best thing that you could do for somebody is to just get them to the point where they're self-sufficient.
Yeah.
But that doesn't sell books, and that doesn't, you know, get podcast downloads and that kind of stuff. you want them to keep coming back. And the best thing you could be doing is sending, but that means empowering. And that means encouraging people to do the hard work of reading the Bible for themselves, of praying for themselves, of talking to their neighbors, getting out of their Christian bubble, maybe trusting them a little bit to not wander away if one week there's not youth group, you know. It's so easy to have that stranglehold and to believe that we control all the pieces. But really, the best thing we can do is teach the pieces how to be in control themselves.
That's powerful. I'm going to coin that.
What? Okay, sure.
If you had one piece of advice to give the church leaders who are listening in the UK, in the USA, and we've got a few in West Africa as well, what one piece of advice would you give them around this transition if they're thinking things are not working out and they might have an inkling that it's to do with the fact that they may be acting as a Pharisee? What one piece of advice would you give them?
When I used to work on films, I was an assistant director on some Christian films, and the smartest thing I ever did, and I don't know where the idea came from, was that it was my job, no matter what happened on set, I had to clean the toilets every night. And because we were on different locations and different sets, I think that you as a leader should do the most degrading job every night, every week. Humble yourself for your congregation, for your people, and that'll help you get in touch with them, because it's so easy to be in your ivory tower, in your posh little office, all your meetings and things. Drop what you're doing right now and go clean the bathroom, honestly. Take the trash out. You know, do the humbling thing and do it often, and that is your job. Humble yourself and the Lord will exalt you. I mean, the Bible says that all the time.
Yeah.
So, if you want to stop being a Pharisee, humble yourself, and do some really degrading work. Go talk to some people that nobody likes, you know.
Powerful. That's powerful. So your podcast, The Truth Podcast, which I would recommend leaders listen to. It's really good. I mean, it does come from an American context, but I got a lot out of it because I've said it before. And if you listen to a couple of the episodes I've done previously, you know, and a lot of them are with Americans, you know, America sneezes and the rest of the world catches a cold. So whatever is happening in America could affect us anyway and has affected us. So it's worth listening to the Truth Podcast, and it's on all the big podcast platforms. So that's going to be on our show notes, all the links to Chris Starron and everything. And I want to say so, so, so grateful to you today. It's a short, but, you know, when we say we have a small meal, but it was rich. It was rich in calories, rich in nutrients. So thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you for having me. God bless you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Healthy Church Growth Show. If you found this beneficial, do make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. Don't forget, join me and my guests every Monday for another practical episode of the Healthy Church Growth Show podcast.